This is the I Read Comic Books podcast, the very best comic book podcast for regular comic book fans. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, and joining me this week, two $5 comics I have no intention of buying simply on principle, Brian Murray.
Hi.
And our friend from the Next Issue podcast, Danny.
Hello, everyone.
How you guys doing this week? I'm very excited to talk about comic books with both of you. It's been a wild week. Last week's episode was our Women's International History Month episode. It was great. If you haven't given that a listen, go back and listen to it. But before we get into two things today, and before we get into talking about comic books, I should say, we're going to talk about two quick things. One, Akira Toriyama passed away recently, creator of Dragon Ball, Dragon Quest, or art for Dragon Quest, Dr. Slump, an incredible creator, a monumental person in the comic book world. I think there isn't a comic book reader today that hasn't read something or hasn't directly been inspired by Dragon Ball. An incredible mind, and honestly, like, it's an unbelievable loss. I usually do not get like torn up by celebrity deaths because it's, you know, they're people and things happen in life. For some reason, this one like hit me particularly hard. I think one of the things that really rocked me was that it seemed like this was very sudden. And the folks over at Shonen Jump, I think that maybe represent their Akira Toriyama's estate, were like, yeah, he was still working on things. There were things in progress. We had plans to do stuff. And it's really just devastating to see this humongous person in the comic book world lost. But, you know, life happens and that is just what happens. I don't know, Danny, I don't know if you guys had anything to say before we move on. I was devastated this week.
Yeah, same here, Mike. I mean, I was looking back when I heard the news, I started thinking, and Dragon Ball is the franchise that I've been a fan of the longest and still ongoing, like where I'm still actively seeking out content. Yeah. So it was, I mean, it shaped kind of like my fandom for, you know, better or worse. I remember getting back home from school and trying to do my homework very quickly so I could watch Dragon Ball before mm-hmm. dinner. So yeah, for sure, Akira Toriyama, he's meant a lot to a lot of people, and including myself. So it was lovely to see the outpour of like especially like comic creators, you know, like how much influence, and then them showing a little bit of their work and how it was influenced by Toriyama. So yeah, his legacy will live on, but for sure our heart goes out to the family and the loved ones in this moment. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely one of my first nerd properties as well. I remember running around the elementary school playground with my friend. My friend had these Iron Man action figures mm-hmm. that we just pretended were Dragon Ball characters. Like that's how big it was in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, Dragon Ball Z, I think one of the first anime that I actually sat down to watch as a little kid. I think one of my first screen names on AOL Instant Messenger was like Super Saiyan something, like five or six numbers that were somehow important to Dragon Ball. It was ridiculous. I Dragon Ball has been a part of my life since I can remember, like in and out, and obviously it's made a huge impact, I think, on most of the folks here on the show. And like I said, it's a huge impact on just the comic book industry, so massive loss. But like Danny said, hearts go out to the family and the everyone else over there who's dealing with this massive loss. But the one other thing, I want to move on. We got to talk about other stuff today. One other thing I want to shout out, our good friend Chris Solis has a new Kickstarter that is out as of right now. I think you can go check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes for A Flag to Fly number 2. If you're curious about this series, you can go read the first issue of this series right now for free on Global Comics. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. It's a fun little book done by Chris. Lane Lloyd is on art. Dave Lentz on letters. There's a variant cover by Kara Hutsed, and editing by Aubrey Lynn Jepsen, who also worked on the Tales from the Cloakroom anthology. We had some of the folks on. I think we actually we had Aubrey on the show to talk about that. So really, really cool people all working on this book. And the book is a lot of fun. I really like the first issue. And I think the second one is going to be a lot of fun as well. So go check that out. And but yeah, let's talk about comic book. That's what we're here to do. We're here to talk about comic books. So let's just dive right into things. Let me kick things over to Danny and ask you the two legally mandated questions that I always ask, which is, how have you been? How have comic books been?
Mike, I've been actually pretty busy over the past couple of weeks. Before I dive into the comics, I haven't been into a trading card game in a little while, since mm-hmm. probably before COVID. But Fantasy Flight Games just launched a new Star Wars game called Star Wars Unlimited. If you are one of our Patreons and you're watching the video version of this, you can see me holding up a box that I haven't opened yet. I'm itching to get into the packs, but it's uh-huh. really fun. I've been to a bunch of pre-releases. I'm going weekly to my shop to play on, you know, the weekly, get some promos and stuff like that. And I'm looking forward to actually getting into constructed decks once I open up all my stuff.
Heck yeah.
Just to like build out some decks and see the synergies and, you know, pulling cool cards and stuff. So yeah, that's taken up too much of my time, a lot more time than sure. I didn't already have. I haven't even been able to go see Dune 2. So that's how busy I've been over the past few weeks.
Oh man.
I can't believe you would do this to me. You know how much money I spent on Pokemon cards in the last month, and now you can tell me this exists.
I know. I'm sorry, Brian, but it's so good. If you're on the Discord and you're playing, let me know. Hit us up because I just want to play with people, even if it's just online or whatever the case may be. It's such a fun game. But as far as comic books, this week I got into Black Cloak Volume 1 from Image Comics. This is comic book that Mike's talked about in the past a bunch because he really likes it. This is written by Kelly Thompson, who currently is also working on Birds of Prey over at DC Comics. She also just wrapped up a long run on Captain Marvel, probably one of the longest runs that I can remember on a character, with art by Meredith McLaren, who Mike talked about recently about Stonehearted, the Kickstarter book, but she also worked with Thompson on Heart in a Box from Dark Horse a few years back. So if you like Black Cloak and you want to see those creators work together again, or I guess more of those creators working together, you can go check that out. And of course, letters by Becca Carey. So this book follows Detective Faye Essex, who is working to solve three murders in Kiros, which is the last city in the known world. But as we move forward, this case becomes more and more personal, and the threats start to reveal a sinister conspiracy behind everything that's going on. So it's a really cool mystery. There's a lot of fantasy elements. I originally read this on Thompson's Substack way back then, which is kind of like the new hipster way of saying, like, you know, I was into this book before it was cool, you know, before all
you learned. I was on the ground floor, man.
That's right. Yeah. But yeah, back then when everyone launched a Substack, Thompson put this out there and I checked it out. Funny enough, I didn't really connect with it back then. And then even when Image relaunched it, like published it on their own, I was like, I feel like I've checked this out already. I'll wait for the trade. And boy, am I glad that I was able to finally get, like, I'm glad I gave it a second chance.
Yes.
I think the book has a really nice, slow mystery. There's great pace towards the six issues. I do think it reads better altogether, at least for me. Like, I felt like I was able to grasp everything and just kind of stay invested in the story. There's a little bit of humor sprinkled all throughout. There's some subtle world building all throughout. So nothing is like super in your face about this world, which I think it's something that Thompson does really well. She also writes like people dialogue in a really fun way where it's not like monotonous, or it just feels like it's taking up a lot of time, a lot of space on the page. Because you wouldn't want anything covering up this artwork. So yeah. And I really enjoyed it. The tension continues to kind of build. And then I like the parallel of how the book opens and the book kind of ends, at least this first volume, because there's more coming. I think July, the next issue is coming out. But yeah. And then Mike's already talked about the art as well. This artist, I also didn't kind of fully vibe, but it kind of grew on me. There's a lot of like very simple shapes with like these really thick outlines, which it just felt a little odd to me. But then I started to kind of understand why the artist was using that. The magic looks really cool. The flashbacks are in a really nice monochromatic wash. And then even every part of the city that they visit feels very distinct, very new, just like really cool ways to explore. And the highlight for me was the crime when we go back and revisit it. It's in black and white, so everything feels like a more like just high tension noir. I don't know. It was a really great choice, I thought. So highly recommend this. I think I'm going to follow this on the trade just because I had such a good experience reading the trade. But I'm definitely looking forward to more from both of these creators.
Hell yeah.
So when that was coming out in Substack, was it just like one page at a time?
I believe they dropped the whole first issue, which is a long one from what
Yeah.
The trade doesn't have cutoff points. It just goes and goes. So I I was trying to figure out like where it was stopping as I was taking notes, but then I just kind of gave up on like the issue numbering. I was like, I'm just gonna go through with this. So
yeah, I was a little late to the Substack for this just because I was testing the waters a little bit, I think. When I eventually did go back to support like Kelly's Substack, I noticed that she does drop just like full issue. She's like, here's 60 pages of a comic, and then a month will go by or a couple weeks or something like that will go by. Here's another 24 issues. Here's 36 or however many ones. I think with the Substack money, she mentioned, because it was like a grant, right, to do a certain number of pages, I think, over a certain amount of time. And so I think they were dropping pages as like weekly or two or three times a week renditions, and then you would just get a full issue at the end. So like, yeah, it was interesting because then it would allow them to do like 32 or 36 page long issues. But I think in the future they're going to be doing like the standard 22 or 24 just because it's more affordable for them to print that. So like Substack did allow them to do a little bit more, which is why that first issue I think is like 64 or 60 pages or something,
yeah,
which is crazy. But like it's the perfect length to like get you so invested that you go, oh my god, if I don't get number two right now, I'm gonna fucking scream, which is exactly how I felt after I read the first issue. So
yeah, that's kind of a bummer. Like I understand like the realities of publishing and stuff, but I do wish that creators could just like tell the story and take as many pages as it takes to finish an issue.
Yeah.
It's a bummer to see all the publishing trappings that keep coming up when we're like, we just want to enjoy good comic books.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think we could talk about this at length, but I think like hopefully maybe one day we'll see a change in that. I don't know. That's a whole other discussion. But Brian, why don't you tell us how you've been, what you've been reading before I start going off on a tangent that I won't be able to stop.
I've been pretty good. Your West Michigan weather watch. It's back to feeling like what March in Michigan is supposed to feel like, which is to say miserable. It's been like warm and sunny the last few days, and now it is 35 degrees outside. And no one is more upset than my cat, who I last saw sitting at our sliding glass door, just staring at the porch, wishing for better times. comics wise, I picked up Marvel's Demon Wars on Hoopla. It's a story and art by Peach Momoko. This book is, first of all, this book is gorgeous. Yeah. If you haven't looked at Momoko's art, you are doing yourself a disservice because she knocks out of the park every time. This is actually a collection of issues, which I think might be part of why I didn't fully follow it at first. Our main character, Mariko, is the daughter of an Oni, and the book like makes it very clear that like stuff has happened before this that was probably in another book that I didn't read or that I read and forgot, because that's my MO.
I think this follows Demon Days, which was the first part of that story, and then you're catching up on Demon Wars, which is the next part of that arc. So it's a whole universe that Momoko kind of built over at Marvel. So
yeah, I definitely recommend you go back to the first issue of Demon Days.
Yeah,
because now that you say that out loud, I'm like, I definitely read that. I just suck. this book follows her entering the spirit world. Her ancestor, Kigen Doshi, who by design at least appears to be like this universe's null or carnage. It's unclear, but he's red and toothy. His head was chopped off and he was stuffed into a shrine to protect the spirit world. She came into possession of his head in the form of like a mask, like over her lower face, which I assume she puts on and then becomes a superhero. But because she's been using his power, it has like woken up his dead body and he started to thrash around and is causing earthquakes in Japan. So she basically has to choose, like, is she going to allow these earthquakes to continue and get worse as he grows in strength, or is she going to return the head and give up her powers and also potentially, you know, risk unleashing Kigen Doshi onto the rest of the world? I didn't really follow her thought process throughout this book. Like, I genuinely had no idea what she was going to do when we got to the end of it. But it was very fun to watch her encounter all of these Momokoverse versions of the different Marvel characters, some of which I had no idea who they were supposed to be. Like Hayabusa was, I think, Falcon, just because he was a Falcon guy.
Okay.
But other ones, we've got Nikomata, who is a Black Panther man, or Kumosuke, who is literally referred to as the friendly neighborhood spider yokai.
That's amazing.
He is definitely much more spider than man in this version. Like, he has many eyes and spider fangs and sprays webs on people.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, all the character designs look amazing, because of course they do.
Right.
The thing that really got to me too is the coloring in this book. Momoko does a lot of cool stuff with watercolors.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not good enough to know if it's actually like watercolors on paper or if it's digital watercolor.
Sure.
But either way, it looks fantastic. And she does these really cool things where the quote unquote real world is very drab and understated. Lots of like grays and browns. But as soon as she steps into the spirit world, it's like an explosion of color. And at the end of the book, after she has, you know, resolved her issue, we see more of that color in the real world.
Mm.
So I think that's supposed to represent like the return of the spirit world to the mortal world, or at least her perception, Mariko's perception of the mortal world. It kind of makes it feel like the spirit world is what really felt like home to her. But then after like resolving some of these issues, maybe our world feels a bit more like home as well.
Interesting. I mean, Peach Momoko does not mess around, right? Like,
yeah.
Like her art is unbelievably good. And I think the most I've read of hers was she was doing some like X-Men one shots or whatever. And I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool. And then I just dropped off of them for whatever reason. I don't remember why, but oh yeah, that was when I canceled all my books at Marvel or at Amazon, and I was like, you know what, I'll read this all on Marvel Unlimited. So maybe I should get back into it, because I remember enjoying those, because her takes on Marvel characters in her style are so cool. Just like, there's no other word for it other than this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad that this book also had that same feeling.
Yeah, I've been wanting to revisit this because I read Demon Days as it was coming out, but because they're really allowing Momoko to take the time to work on she's doing everything right in the book.
Mm-hmm.
As well as throwing in like Star Wars Vision one shots in between. But I want to go back and read this. I do love all the, I think my favorite from the first arc was like Venom was like a snake that felt very Orochimaru like.
In
6 months when you guys are caught up on Marvel Unlimited, y'all can read the Ultimate X-Men stuff that she's doing, because boy, let me tell you, it's really cool. Like, especially if you're a fan of Armor, you're gonna really enjoy that series.
So. I've heard some good things, Brian, about that.
I hope to hear, maybe in 6 months we'll do another show and then you read Ultimate X-Men Volume 1.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'll go into that with no idea what it's about as well.
Yeah.
Be confused for 2 pages and then decide I don't care because it's awesome anyways.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, let me talk about what I've been reading, how I've been. Yesterday, I walked 13,000 steps, which is pretty cool. Pokemon Community Days can really get me to go outside as long as the weather is nice, I found. But beyond that, I did sit down and read some comics. I read a bunch of pretty decent like first issues and second issues and stuff. I will say, I forgot to say this at the top of the show, but today's everything that we've read is trying to fall inside of our Goodreads theme of the month this month, which is like comics by women, because it's International Women's Month. Thanks guys for finding something good, because there's a plethora of things out there. But I read I Heart Skull Crusher number 1. This is from Boom Studios, written by Josie Campbell, art by Alessio Zano, colors by Angel Di Santiago, and letters by Jim Campbell. This is the coolest freaking comic book that you can buy on the shelves from this past week, as far as I'm concerned. The story is about a girl named Trini. She's 18 years old. She's orphaned and desperately in love with Skull Crusher, the best player of her favorite sport, Screaming Painball. After a competition is announced that could allow Trini to join Skull Crusher's Screaming Painball team, Trini decides she'll do anything to show off her skills to join the team and capture Skull Crusher's heart. Skull Crusher is like the most badass woman you've ever seen, and Trini is absolutely in love with her. This is like a post-apocalyptic world where water is scarce and violence is everyone's favorite pastime, but it's fine because it's sports. And that sounds almost like a really bad pitch for this comic, but I promise you, for every moment this comic feels bleak, it makes up for it five times over with like anime inspired super corny and hilarious moments. This feels very like aimed at a slightly younger audience, just because it is a little bit more lighthearted and a little bit more wholesome than you would think a Mad Max style world usually would lend itself to. But again, it's I was smitten by Trini. She's such a fun character. She's like, I think like a lot of the lightheartedness and fun of this book comes from the extremely excited and vibrant art of the comic. Like Alessio Zono and Angel Di Santiago do some incredible work in this comic. Zono's pencils give Trini this almost SpongeBob level dynamic feel, where like at any moment she could be bouncing around the panels of a page, and Di Santiago's colors add like a truly bright feeling to this entire story that in every other comic book that would take place in a similar setting would be dark and grim. So I appreciated that there was like this extreme lightheartedness and kind of just like teenage fun feeling to the entire book. And I really can't express, though, how funny this book is. Like, there's one sequence in particular that I was like doubled over with laughter. They like lean into the heaviest of ridiculous, like character going through their dream moment, anime inspired. It's drawn in a completely different style just to belabor the point of like how like crazy Trini is about this Skull Crusher character. I really, really loved it. I posted a screenshot of it on our Discord, so if you're not in our Discord, you should join that. There's a link in the show notes, but it's such a fun book. I was freaking out when I was reading. I was posting it to pretty much anyone that I know who reads comics saying, you have to go buy this. And I think Danny also read this book, totally agrees with me. But yeah, sometimes I think, though, we need a comic that feels really fun and doesn't take itself too seriously, even if the like setting of the book could be taken very seriously. I think this book is exactly that. Yeah, again, despite the setting, the story doesn't really give you time to think about it too much, as it bounces between story beats and really funny moments. I can't wait for the second issue, because this book is so much fun. I don't like the $5 price point, but that is the cost of doing business in comics these days, it seems. But nonetheless, this is totally worth the price of admission. I think it's such a fun, like exciting book that I haven't felt like this enamored with in such a long time. So highly recommend I Heart Skullcrusher number one. It's so much fun.
It's really giving me like shonen sports anime vibes.
Yes.
Yeah. It definitely has that. Yeah.
It has a lot of those tropes where like the reluctant coach, like you know, you run across that stuff. It's also, it's really funny. Like, just like Mike said, I want to emphasize how funny this is. I knew it was going to be a little bit for a younger audience when I saw that it was from the Boombox imprint at Boom Studios.
Right.
But I the cover was so cool that I was like, I don't care. I need to figure out what this skull, I need to know whose skull's being crushed in this book. Right. And boy, did we find out.
I didn't really get into the specifics. Like, there's a lot of really like interesting side characters and just fun moments. I really think discovering them on your own is totally worth it. I think if you like kind of zanier books, you'll totally love this book. It works on all levels for me, and I can't recommend it enough. But let's move on. Let's talk about comics that are on the top of our pile, books that are new or old, or just books that you're trying to get off of your shelf. Before we jump into our top of our pile picks, I want to shout out some of the folks that are hanging out with us live on our Discord who are reading things that they told me about, so I'm shouting them out on the show. Nick's going to be reading Dawn Runner number 1. Simon is going to be reading Time Before Time volume 5. And Hugh is going to be reading that brand new book coming out from our good pal Jesse Lonergan, Man's Best number 1. So let me kick things right over to Brian. What is on the top of your pile?
The top of my pile is Frank Herbert's Dune, the graphic novel. This is obviously written by Frank Herbert. Also had...
Sorry.
We all just did our best Timothy Chalamet impression.
Right. I'm sorry, Brian. Continue.
That's fine. You just completely shattered my train of thought. Dune originally written by Frank Herbert. This adaptation also has work by Brian Herbert and sci-fi author Kevin J. Anderson, who I read a lot of his Star Wars books growing up. So it's kind of piqued my interest to really pick this up. Mm-hmm. It's illustration by Raoul Allen and Patricia Martin. I've heard a lot about Dune being a good story. I wouldn't know, because every time I've tried to get into any Dune property, it has sucked so hard. I watched the 80s movie on a date and fell asleep.
Oh.
A date did not end well. The book also put me to sleep, but at least I was alone for that. There was no one to judge me for it.
Mm-hmm.
You need the Hans Zimmer score to wake you up every once in a while with those big right. the yells.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm missing. I'm hoping that this will be the medium that really allows me to get into this story. Because like I believe people when they say that it's like a fantastic sci-fi story. I just have not found a version of it that appeals to me yet. Mm-hmm. And I haven't watched the new movies because I'm just sick of two-part movies, man. You don't need to make a two-part movie. If you can't make a good movie in 3.5 hours, then you can't make a good movie. That's my hot take.
Interesting.
No, I'm not still mad about Across the Spider-Verse.
All right. Wow. All right. I was going to make a joke of instead of Netflix and chill, it was Netflix and sleeping pill. But then I didn't think that it worked. But
the rhyme is good, though. I like the rhyme.
I know. Right. But, you know, I've heard good things about this adaptation, Brian. Specifically, Raoul Allen's art is supposed to be incredible. I mean, Raoul Allen as a comic book artist is unbelievable. So I hope that that alone will at least keep you through the graphic novel. Hopefully that will make it work. Because like you said, this is supposed to be like one of the best sci-fi stories that you can read. And so hopefully you can get dry. I've never read it myself, but, you know, let me know. Fingers crossed. That's good.
People seem to love this world because this week they're putting out a new miniseries about like another one of the houses. So like Boom Studios, who's been publishing the comics for a while, they keep putting like all these, I guess, stories about the world, like other houses or like other pieces of the war, whatever. So there's definitely a lot of lore there, Brian. There's definitely an audience for it. Hopefully you become a part of that audience after reading this, because if you do, like I said, there's plenty of you to like dive into afterwards.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing I've learned from Game of Thrones, that the side material is always great and worth reading.
I was going to say, Brian already loves one sci-fi series that has a focus around a desert planet. So I don't think he necessarily needs to read another, but you
and
know,
giant
we'll
worms.
See. Yeah, that
and weird spice, space magic.
Different spice.
Different
yeah,
spice.
And a psychoactive too. Spice drug.
Wait yeah, a minute.
Did Star Wars rip off Dune? Listen, I'm not the first person to say that.
It's
I
not
know
a rip off if you do it better.
With that, I'm going to move on. Danny. Or before, actually, I'm going to go to me really quick. before Danny can even get into it. For me this week, I am going to be reading Clementine Book 2. This is by Tilly Walden. I have to say, I totally forgot that this book was even coming out because I think it was supposed to come out last year and it came out, I think, this year. Or maybe my local comic book shop just got a copy for me. They have a tendency of doing that. Talk about it in the post credits. But in case you missed it, Tilly Walden is working on a set of original graphic novels that follow Clementine, a character popularized by the Walking Dead Telltale game series, which is like a super niche thing. But I think she was a very popular character, which is why Kirkman said, hey, I got this IP farm. Let's get to Millen. And so he, you know, asked Tilly Walden to work on this book. And so far, I will say book one was incredible. Maybe book one was incredible to me because I didn't know who Clementine was. I didn't even know it was a Walking Dead book. And that's crazy because I'm pretty sure it's in the first page that I somehow skipped over that this is like a Walking Dead tie-in. But regardless, I went in. Met this character, Clementine, loved the buildup. I was like, oh, this is kind of spooky. This is kind of scary. Oh my God, are there zombies? Is Image doing another fucking zombie book? And then I realized, oh no, it's Walking Dead.
It's a tie into the Telltale Games game, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. And so anyways, it doesn't matter because it's Tilly Walden. So it looks great. It reads great. I mean, like, her writing has always been superb. I like the way that she approached this very character driven story that exists in the Walking Dead series. I think the Telltale Games were popularized or because they were very, very, very character focused. So I like that feeling has been carried over into this book, having never played those Telltale Games. But yeah, this first volume was very strong, despite me not wanting to ever really read or watch any more Walking Dead content after one particular character's death in the comic book kind of put me over the line of caring about anything or anyone ever again, ever in the world, not just in Walking Dead. I was numb for weeks.
That was Mike's nihilistic spiral.
Yeah, exactly.
I just figured out who it was, who the character was.
You know, everyone, yeah. I think we could talk, but I think everyone knows who it is. But anyways, somehow this book kept me hooked, despite the reveal, hey, this is zombies, hey, this is the same universe. I was like, no, this actually worked really, really well. And I think it's that the approach to the book about being specifically about Clementine and trying her trying to just survive the world versus the constant Walking Dead. How could this possibly get worse? We're the monsters. Oh no, they're the monsters. Oh no, we're worse than them. Back and forth that series kind of took. I'm not bitter about Walking Dead, I promise. Walden's art, following, you know, the black, white, and gray of the original Walking Dead series really works well, I think, in this. If you recall, Cliff Rathburn, incredible artist, did in amazing work with just a three-color palette. I mean, shades of gray, if you really want to be pedantic about it, but still, like, a very simple color palette made that Walking Dead really, really work from an art perspective. And I think Walden takes that approach and adds a little bit more black to her art that makes the book feel dark but not depressing. It's really weird the way that she's done it, but I feel like it works really well. So I'm gonna have to get a quick recap of book one before I dive into this, but I'm excited to see what's in store for book two because I really, really enjoyed book one. I remember thinking I didn't think I could get hooked back on Walking Dead, and here I am, very excited for another volume. So now that I finally have this in my hands, I'm gonna sit down and read this. I'm very excited.
And if people at Skybound are listening, I think Mike is saying he wants an anthology of The Walking Dead, Black, White, and Blood. That's pretty much what I just heard.
Yeah. But give me The Walking Dead recolored, not in color, but just black and white, and then blood. Blood.
I do have a question for Brian, because I assume you play the Telltale games.
No, I'm just very online.
You haven't? Okay. Well, then maybe for our audience, if you want to let us know in the Discord or send Mike an email, did you save Ducky or did you let him die? What did you choose to do? Just let me know that and let us know.
Is this about Kingdom Hearts? Oh, wait. Different character.
Yeah.
Anyways, Danny,
pet name for Donald Duck. He calls him Ducky when they're alone.
I call him Ducky. Danny, what's on the top of your pile this week?
Well, Mike, the top of my pile was hard to get to. I'm not going to lie. It was a difficult decision.
Okay.
I do want to shout out the book that Nick picked, Dawn Runner number one. I loved it. I got a chance to read it a little early.
Nice.
Boy, it's a lot of fun. If you're a fan of the movie Pacific Rim, I think you're going to like that book. I was just going to say that.
Sold. Oh, Rom V's on that? Okay.
Yeah,
sold.
Yeah,
done.
Yeah.
Easy.
The artist who Kegel, I'm not very familiar with them, but man, do they draw some really cool stuff. But the book I'm going to talk about, and it's going to be the book that Hugh picked, Man's Best, number one, from Boom Studios. This is written by Pornsack Pichicho. I looked up how to say his name before I came to...
I think you got it.
I spelled it phonetically in my document just to make sure to nail it. But he's written books like The Good Asian, and interestingly enough, for this connection here, he was an assistant editor on We Three, the Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely book that also features a trio of animals.
You mean that lighthearted book for kids?
Yeah.
But talking animals, because all talking animal books are for kids, right?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Said Tom King as he was writing
Animal Pen. Don't read Feral number one.
Yeah.
Don't read, what's that, Stray Dogs number one. I wouldn't recommend those. They're talking animals, but that is not for kids.
Either is We Three, to be clear.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But also has art by Jesse Lonergan, who worked on Hedra, which I think is one of like the podcast's just kind of favorite books overall. I think everyone who's read that really enjoy that. And more recently for Nick, worked on Miss Truesdale's and The Fall of Hyperborea over at Dark Horse. Also features letters by Jeff Powell. So I got to read The Ashcan a few weeks ago, which is cool. Yeah, I know. I love getting an ash can.
Did you get that from your local shop?
Yeah, this was, so the ash can was just a normal purchase. It wasn't like a, yeah, it was just a, they put it out, boom, put it out, which yeah. is really cool.
The only reason I ask is because I was listening to the Challengers comic podcast, which is a fantastic podcast about comic book industry stuff. And they talked about the ash can, but I feel like they mentioned that it was like a very limited distribution and your shop had to mm-hmm. like make special orders in order to get them. So that's, I'm really glad that you got a copy of that because I feel like that's, yeah, I was able that's to a really cool like thing like, to have.
After go to like my fifth shop, I was like, oh, somebody still has one. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the book follows three emotional support animals that are living on a spaceship. That's looking for a new planet, but this mission is all for the shareholders. So like there's this big company that's kind of funding this mission. So there's probably not the best of intentions for looking for a new home. But then the ship crash lands on this planet and now these animals have to help out the people on their ship, right? Because they're responsible kind of for them.
Sure.
The first thing that kind of drew me to this was the creators.
Hell yeah.
Also, the premise seems pretty cool. Like, I don't have any pets, but I love stories about animals, and I love getting invested. The character designs are so cool. Like, if you read anything by Lonergan, like, you just know. And then the last thing, like, Boom's been putting out some really good stuff over the past few months. Like, I'm always willing to check out one of their number ones. Like Mike just talked about, you know, I Heart Skull Crushers from Boom. This Place, the book by Ed Brisson, Zawa. The Power Rangers stuff is really cool. Like mm-hmm. Grim Animal Pound, from which is another animal book. So yeah, I'm very excited to finally get to read the full book because the first few pages that I got the chance to read on the Ashcan were amazing. So very excited to follow this up.
Yeah, you know, you're not the first person to recommend that Displaced book from Boom, because that's a Ed Brisson book. I've heard it's incredible, right? It's like a bunch of people just disappear from a town, and then
the
people that live
disappears.
In this...
Yeah, town kind of disappears. There's a few people that were not in the town at the time, but now everyone's forgetting about them as well. So like they kind of have to work together to figure out what the hell's going on.
Interesting.
It's very like Twilight Zone-ish, like stuff like that, so...
Yeah, I've heard it pitched as it's kind of like Lost, but it's not nearly as overly complicated.
There's less smoke monsters.
Sure, sure. The DARPA initiative does not get involved. I don't know. What other bits can I make about a show that I never watched? Well, I think that just about does it for today's show. I want to, you know, next week's show is going to be fun. It's going to be live on Twitch. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, make sure to check us out live on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/IRCB podcast. It's going to be me and Paul and Kate. We're going to be talking about comics and who knows what other shenanigans get on there. It's going to be a blast. I love doing our Twitch episodes just because they're chaotic and I never know what's going to go wrong. So make sure you're there. As always, I want to say thank you to Brian and Danny for doing this episode with us. Thank you to everyone on Discord listening live. Thank you to Nick for proof listening this episode. Thanks to Xander for making the show sound good. And I guess until next time, comics are good, and so are you.